Sometimes we make decisions and speak words without knowing the full implications of them until later. When His Holiness Bhakti Chuu Swami greeted me and we spent a few minutes together, I said, I will just follow you, because whatever you do will be the right thing. And if I follow you, then that will also be the right thing. So when Maharaj, from my perspective, went off course in his, what was otherwise one of the most beautiful and eloquent descriptions of Sri Raghunatha Goswami that I've ever heard, I kept wanting to say something, but I'd already committed myself that whatever you do is the right thing, and I'll just follow it. So I had to tolerate. But I must also say that at the end, when Maharaj spoke about when I first tracked down Rishikesh Mahaprabhu, I was actually enjoying the story, because I knew actually it wasn't me. It was all Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, he may have phrased it like that, that it was me, but actually I knew it was Srila Prabhupada. And it was actually quite funny how it all happened. I don't know where you get all these things. I mean, Raghunatha Das Goswami, yes, we have Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have Chaitanya, I don't know where you get these things from. But anyway, but it's true. You know, I was driving home, and I never liked to end the day's preaching. You know, I would always just look for one more opportunity. So we were driving back, and I saw just sort of next to our humble ambassador car, a Mercedes Benz with a good-looking young man in it. So I told the driver, follow that car. And then, then she went to this huge mansion. And then I asked his driver, Seth G. Cormier, whose car is this? And then, but yeah, it was Prabhupada's mercy that he engaged us. And of course brought us together with so many other wonderful devotees. Recently I had the opportunity to meet our god brother Jagat Purush Prabhu, who lives in North Carolina. I don't even remember the last time I met him. And he told me some very nice stories about his mood of service to Srila Prabhupada. When he first came to Bombay, he was sort of shocked and appalled to find that we had a hired cook. Srila Prabhupada said we could get a hired cook. But Jagat Purush Prabhu was extremely brahminical. He was in Detroit. He was also from a quite well-to-do family. And he was extremely strict. And when he saw what was happening in Bombay, he was just bewildered. So he asked me, why do you have a hired person? And I said, I can't get any of the devotees to cook. This is too difficult. Now, at the time, Jagat Purush Prabhu thought that, because he knew carpentry, so he thought maybe there's more scope for his service in Mayapur, because there was construction. But when he heard that, he said, all right, then I'll take it up. And it was really hot, and you know, the facilities were very primitive. We just had one of those, I think like a kerosene burner, it was like, and with that little thing, I had to cook these like big pots, and there was very little to cook also. We would just go out and beg, because Prabhupada didn't want us to spend the life membership money. And that was our only real income. So we said, yeah, so one devotee would go out and try to get rice, dal, spices. And one day, it was so hot, Jagat Purush Prabhu told me this recently, that he could hardly stay on his feet. He felt like he would collapse. And he's just like so hot and sweaty, and you're not supposed to sweat when you're serving the deities, and his mind was reeling. And afterwards, he left that little cooking area and went to the other part of the shack where the devotees were staying. And he was condemning himself. Like, what kind of a person am I? I'm just thinking of myself, my body, my senses, my mind. I'm not thinking of Krishna. And he saw, there was like a little picture of Krishna in that hut, and there was a peacock feather, one peacock feather, maybe stuck in the chatai, the thatch. So he took that peacock feather and he started to fan that picture of Krishna. And he immediately felt complete relief. All his fatigue and heat, it all just went away. He just realized that this has to, you know, this is Krishna consciousness. Thinking of Krishna, how to please the senses of Krishna, not thinking about my own mind and senses. So, so Raghunath Das Goswami is really the example of renunciation, coming from immeasurable wealth and giving it up for a higher cause. And I must also say that Srila Prabhupada did see that uh, sort of say similarity, but a connection between me and Raghunath Das Goswami. I mean, in the external sense, not in any, you know, high esoteric sense. And, and I had no idea really who the six Goswamis were, but I had this idea I wanted to be like the six Goswamis and just have this idea, just go to Vrindavan and wander around and hey Radhe and Krishna. and I never said anything to Srila Prabhupada, but he really knew us. And one day, without my having said anything, he told me that Raghunath Das Goswami managed his father's estate very expertly. And then he went to Vrindavan and became a Goswami. So you should also manage your spiritual father's estate, meaning the Juhu project. And then you can go to Vrindavan and become a Goswami. So that was a sort of chastisement, but one that also gave some future hope. As far as my torn and tattered clothes, Srila Prabhupada quoted a saying that one who is known as a Brahmin does not have to wear a thread. They said, people know you, and they like you also, but still, you should dress better. So, Prabhupada had a very skillful way of correcting. Really very tactful, but a very incisive way. And as far as the story about my parents, that was, yeah, my parents came to Calcutta, and they wanted me back. And so eventually my father said to Srila Prabhupada that we want to establish a trust for our son, and we want him to come back to America and sign the papers. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. You can send the papers and he will sign. Prabhupada handled it very expertly, but it was still tense. It was still tense. And, my mother, she was more concerned about my health because I was very frail and sickly, sort of. So, when she saw that things weren't going in the direction of my returning, she started to cry.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's wonderful. Just connect here.
Okay. So, Srila Prabhupada had a bowl. He would always keep a bowl with prasad. And especially, I think pretty much everywhere, but especially in Calcutta, it was rasgulla and sandesh. So, he had his sister, Pishima, distribute that to prasad, and especially to my mother, who was weeping. And because at that time people had the idea that if you didn't eat meat, you wouldn't get enough protein. So Srila Prabhupada said to my mother that these sweets are made of cheese, and they're very high in protein. And then he turned to me and said, you must eat 2 dozen rasgulla and sandesh every day. But still, you know, you could see they were sort of pacified, but they weren't completely satisfied. So then he said, anyway, if your son wants to go with you, he can go. It's up to him. So I said, no, I would rather stay and serve Srila Prabhupada. So then he said, all right, well now it's October and it's getting cold in America and it's pleasant in India. So let him stay with me. And generally I go to America in April. I'll bring him with me then. Actually, he didn't mention about it being getting cold, but I said that actually this is a very good plan. That when it's cold and harsh in America, I can be with Srila Prabhupada in India, and then when it gets pleasant in America, it's too hot in India, I'll come with him to America. And I said, you know, just see how intelligent Srila Prabhupada is. And my father said, actually, he is very intelligent. And Srila Prabhupada said, actually, your son is intelligent because he figured out my strategy. And my father said, actually, you are very intelligent, said the Srila Prabhupada. And then Srila Prabhupada said, well, I guess I must be intelligent. Otherwise, how could I attract so many intelligent young men like your son? So, it was sort of settled up like that. And by the end, my father and even my mother were just completely charmed by Srila Prabhupada. And as we were leaving Srila Prabhupada's room in Rye Castle, 300 Road, my father said to me, and if you knew my father, you would know these are like, in his value system, these are like the highest compliments that he could pay to anyone. And he said, I can say 2 things about your master. One, he's a brilliant organizer. And 2, he really knows how to deal with people. So, then a little later, there's a sequel to this, a little later, I went to Madras and living in different people's homes and being offered idlis and dosas and sambar and chutney, I started to gain weight. And when Srila Prabhupada came to Madras and saw me, he said, "You should take a picture of yourself now and send it to your mother." He remembered. So, being sitting here at the Buddha's feet of the Panchatattva, I can't help but think of the Panchatattva in Mayapur. And I was actually here on Gaur Purnima when they installed the Panchatattva in Mayapur. And if I feel those the waves of mercy, like the inundation of mercy that has emanated from Mayapur, from the installation. So it's when I joined, I learned about the process of devotional service. And there are so many items in devotional service. In the Nectar of Devotion, there's a list of 64 items. You know, I just sort of took them all as important. One evening, actually, on that balcony in Calcutta, I had quite a significant talk with His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami. I was just on the balcony, maybe finishing my rounds, and he came out. All the other devotees were asleep, and we had a talk. And basically, he said that his conviction or his realization was that service to the spiritual master is the secret of success in spiritual life. And somehow those words went deep into my heart. Up until then I saw we have to do everything. And we have to chant, we have to study Srila Prabhupada's books, we have to clean the temple, we have to attend the programs, we have to, you know, distribute books, and just on and on and on. But this put things in a specific perspective of service to the spiritual master. We did the same things, but the mood had changed slightly, and the mood was to serve the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, to please Srila Prabhupada. So I started to think, what would please Srila Prabhupada? What does please Srila Prabhupada? And I was like, new, it was all, you know, everything was like that, seemed to be going on in a much higher level. And somehow I got this idea. So one morning when he was having his massage on the balcony, I approached him and I said, "I've been thinking about what pleases you the most. And I thought of two things. One, distributing your books, and two, building the big temple in Mayapur." And when I made that simple statement, Srila Prabhupada, his face lit up and he broke into this big smile that only he had. And he just looked at me with so much compassion and said, "Thank you very much." So, being in Calcutta, we could see how important Mayapur was to Srila Prabhupada. At the time, we didn't have the land at first, but eventually, Tankrishna Swami was able to get some land there. And Srila Prabhupada was so enthusiastic, he was making plans and went to England, had some devotees work on some plans, came back, and had a big meeting with us to explain what his ideas were for Mayapur. And discussed many points, but at the end he said that if you just build this temple in Mayapur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will personally come and take you all back to Godhead. Oh. So, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And it's happening in our lifetime. It's going on right now. And so, that also gives me hope, collectively, if we can do this service, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur will come and take us all back home, back to Godhead. So, service, it's all about service. And the nature of devotional service is that the devotee wants nothing but service. If a devotee does service, and if Krishna says, "What can I give you in return?" the devotee will say, "I just want more service." And then Krishna, he feels more obliged to the devotee. So his desire to give the devotee something in reciprocation increases. But again, if he says, "I want to give you something," the devotee will say, "I want only one thing, service." And so it just increases and increases and increases. And then finally Krishna thinks, "What can I give? I have nothing to give that he'll accept. I have to give myself." But Krishna giving himself really means giving service. It's just very beautiful reciprocation. So Raghunath Das Goswami, he showed us the example of how he desired nothing but service. But, if I might say, he did desire one other thing, which is not separate from service, but he desired association. And after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, and his intimate associates in Puri also left, he was so distraught that he decided to give up his life. That such a deep feeling of separation. And so he went to Vrindavan and he thought he'll commit Vaishnava suicide and jump from Govardhan Hill. But before doing so, he wanted to offer respects to Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And when they met him, they requested him, please don't do that. Maybe, because Sanatana Goswami himself had the idea to give up his own life under the wheels of the Jagannath chariot because of he felt that he was sort of defiling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he had these oozing sores and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept insisting on embracing him and she was not and Goswami just felt so terrible. He just felt, you know, I can't continue like this. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew his mind. And he said to him, if you give some property to someone else, is it proper to take it back from him and destroy it? He said, you have already given your body to me. You can't take it back and destroy it. And I have many things that I want to do through your body, which I cannot do myself. And I want to do those things in Vrindavan. So, Srila Sanatana Goswami understood that his decision to give up his life under the chariot wheels of Lord Jagannath was not approved by the Lord. So he and Rupa Goswami said to Raghunath Das that you are with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for his last pastimes. You know what he did. You knew his external activities and his internal moods. And no one else knows that. So you should stay with us and you should tell us about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, speak to us about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so he stayed. And they accepted him as their brother, younger brother. But then he was like so attached to Rupa Goswami, especially when Rupa Goswami left. Again, Raghunath Das was plunged into the ocean of separation. And, you know, Govardhan was so dear to him. And Radhakund. But he composed one verse that without Rupa Goswami, that Govardhan, he was just like a python, it's like the gaping jaws of a python. And maybe that was Radhakund. But anyway, in other words, it had no value. And to the contrary, it was just horrible. It was just horrible because he was so attached to Rupa Goswami. Of course, he did stay and he lived to quite an old age. But although he was so renounced when it came to material opulence, and even just what eating and everything. Although I am reminded of one pastime when Raghunath Das fell sick. And so his devotees were very concerned. They called a doctor from Mathura to diagnose him. And the doctor gave the diagnosis that he's suffering from indigestion from overeating. So the devotees were like so upset. I mean, how could you say that? He just eats like one leaf cup of buttermilk once in 3 days. How could you say that? And Raghunath Das said, actually, it's true. Last night there was a big festival in the spiritual world, and I had too much sweet rice. So, but anyway, so yes. So this is another instruction that although he was so renounced, but when it came to the Lord's devotees, pure devotees, he was so attached. He felt he couldn't live without them. And I think this is a very important instruction for us to be attached to devotees. And of course the devotees like-minded, swajitiya shesthite, sadhu sangha svatvobari, people like-minded, like those devotees were all devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu. And so with us also that devotees of the Panchatattva, especially in our case, coming in this line that has come to us through Srila Prabhupada. That association is so not just relishable, it is relishable, but it's necessary. It's essential. Without that association, we can't live. So I'm glad that His Holiness Bhakti Chiruswami thought of me. He must have known I was floundering out there somewhere in the ocean of Santa Barbara and needed to be brought into the association of devotees. So he called me and I came, and I'm very happy to be here with him and to Gram Prabhu and all of you. Hare Krishna.